Hello and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sutter. I'm joined by co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, for our Locked On Suns Twitter page, if you aren't already, at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support of theirs very much appreciated, as always. And Brendan, we were talking about this beforehand, and I don't think either of us expected this game to be happening as it folded out the way it did. The Suns somehow, someway beat the league-leading Milwaukee Bucks tonight, 114-105. The Suns went on a huge fourth quarter. They outscored the Bucks by 15 points there to really close that things out in the end there. But huge games from Kelly Oubre Jr., Devin Booker had a solid game, DeAndre Ayton possibly his most all-around best performance of the season so far. So a lot of positives hit on, a lot of interesting angles to take through this game, Brennan. So I'll toss it your way first. Just what was your overall reaction to tonight's game?
Well, first we had John Bloom yesterday. Maybe we should go grab James Jones as he kind of holds court over here, have him on the podcast. He looks pretty excited too. Now, I think the biggest thing tonight was, I mean, just doing it against a better team. I think that the way it went down to me felt pretty similar to Saturday. They executed in just about every way. They handled a team that's very unorthodox. Obviously, LeBron is. That was the whole story going into tonight was, you know, LeBron and Giannis, will they use Ayton? Igor wouldn't say this morning. I think everyone kind of expected that to happen after the success they had Saturday. But it's one thing to do it against the unraveling, young, you know, immature Lakers that are getting beaten by teams left and right. It's another thing to do it against the best team in the NBA and really hand it to them, and that was impressive.
It really was, and you look more at the box score here. The first quarter was, you thought at the very beginning of this game, okay, the Bucks are going to blow the Suns out. I thought that as well. They're up 31-20 in the first quarter. I think they were up a few more minutes into the second quarter. They went on a little run before the Suns responded, and it went up to about, I believe, 16 points at one point. And the Suns battled back in this one, Brian. It was really impressive to see. And that second quarter, they outscored the Bucks 32-23. Then, as I mentioned, the fourth quarter outscored them 38-23 by 15 points. So as far as this game, I just did not expect this to happen. And you see the Bucks, one of the league's best teams. And I saw a stat that I didn't even think was real when I first saw it, that the Phoenix Suns, the 14-51 now Phoenix Suns, are the first team in the NBA this season to beat the Milwaukee Bucks twice.
Yeah, and I think probably the only one that will. I mean, they might have some divisional teams that have gotten some up on them already, but I think that says a lot. And I think you know, I think it speaks to, this doesn't sound like a positive, but I actually do mean it as a positive. The inconsistency we've been talking about all year, because it's not just the inconsistency of they can have performances where they just fall off a cliff, but on the other end, they've shown that their ceiling, when they kind of play the right way and get that balance, which I think we'll get into quite a bit here, they can rise up to the challenge of the best teams in the whole league. I mean, we've gone through it plenty of times. They've beaten good teams. Like, over half their wins have been against playoff teams. I would say maybe even more than that. Yeah. They've beaten good teams more frequently than bad teams, it feels like. And so it's impressive that they've been able to get that high when they do get up there. But do you want to start us off with free throws?
Yeah, sure. We'll go right ahead here. And looking at overall, just before I go into that, the Suns have won three of their last four games. So I completely didn't know that. So that's just crazy to think after that 17-game losing streak. But for me, the first free throw tonight is going to be DeAndre Ayton, who had 19 points, 12 rebounds, also three block shots, and a plus-minus in the plus-minus category, a plus 23, which is one of the league leaders, right behind Tyler Johnson, who was a plus 25. So as far as all-around goes, I know offense, he still put up 19 points on eight shots made, but man, three block shots and his impact defensively, a couple of sequences here and there were pretty incredible to see in person.
Yeah, he was, I felt like against the Lakers, like, he contained LeBron well, and LeBron still kind of had his way. But I think tonight was, we said that Saturday was his best game, and I think he just eclipsed himself again, because it wasn't just limiting Giannis. It was reading the play. Several different times, Igor mentioned that in transition, playing defense this way with your center, or even just mixing up positions like that in general, can be tough, because then it's not the same on the other side of the ball. Brooke Lopez was defending Ayton when the Suns were on offense, so that cross-matching can get difficult. But Ayton responded well to that. When he wasn't on Giannis, he still was making an impact, and that's where those blocks really come into play. And so he also, I mean, just the energy today was some of the best that I can remember throughout the entire game, just actually executing that feeding him the ball thing that we've been wondering about. That's been happening, and he's been making plays with the ball in his hands. It's just, I think we're seeing kind of the next step for him.
Yeah, the growth process with DeAndre Ayton seems to be accelerating here the past few games, and you just look at this game as well. Like you said, they ran the offense pretty much through him again for the second consecutive night, but defensively, he was on Giannis through most of the game. He was on LeBron on Saturday. Do you think, I know there's not many of these guys out there like Giannis and LeBron that are these jumbo creators, but do you think they're maybe finding DeAndre Ayton's best defensive role right now as far as doing that?
I think just switching in general, I think we probably... I mean, we talked about him plenty leading up to the draft. I think we knew that would be, if not the best way, because maybe that's too soon to say, but at least maximizing his skill set. And Igor said the same thing. You know, we saw him all year last year play the four. He was out in space defending perimeter shooters, and so he's familiar with this. So I think as it stands right now, doing more of that, I think if they want to win games, it's clearly helping. And maybe it's a little too crazy and bends the back line of the defense. You don't necessarily want Oubre to have to fly around the way that he's been doing the past two nights, but
it's working.
So I think we'll see more of it.
Yeah, that's for sure. And just one more time before we go on our next free throw here. Ayton had a night of 19 points, 12 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 block shots, and 8 of 13 field goal attempts in 34 minutes. But, Brandon, let's go to your first free throw.
Yeah, it's the guy that I just mentioned, Kelly Oubre. I think he's another guy that continues to one-up himself. I think the way he played Saturday, he's kind of the closest connection to the way that they're using Ayton. Is it's demanding the most out of Oubre as a result, because he's up against, I think today he started on Mirotić.
Yeah, he did.
And so he's having to be that rim protector, the weak side rotating rim protector, which, I mean, you think about anyone who watched the Wizards in the playoffs, he was like a 2-3. Now he's coming here, he's kind of playing like the 5 almost defensively. So I think his ability to adapt to that role change the past two nights has been equally, maybe not equally, but pretty exciting to see. And I think shows another kind of thing that he can do on defense. We saw Ayton do this new thing. Oubre also responded and kind of maybe tweak things where he's able to kind of run around and play free safety that way a little bit more often. I think it could clearly help. But on the other side of the ball, just as good, made a bunch of big shots. He kind of was quiet in that third quarter a little bit, and I was like, okay, is he going to get burned out, or, you know, what's going to happen here? And then fourth quarter, made a big three in the corner and a couple big defensive plays down the stretch. So I think those two guys were the clear huge big factors tonight.
Absolutely. Kelly Oubre had a night of 27 points, 13 rebounds, 5 of those were on the offensive glass. He also had 3 block shots and a plus-minus plus 20 in 32.5 minutes. But let's go to the free throw attempts here, Brandon, because this has to be a career high, I think, for Kelly Oubre. 12 of 17 from the free throw tonight. And it's something we're really starting to hone in on with Oubre, especially since he's been in the starting lineup, is that he's become super aggressive now. And that's actually benefiting, I think, DeAndre and Devin Booker more, because unlike, I think, a TJ Warren who doesn't offer the defense that Oubre does, Oubre's still bringing that aggressiveness even to make up for, let's say, like a poor shooting night from the perimeter. He's actually going to drive in the hole and consistently get contact.
Yeah, I think he's better than TJ at this point. I think the way he's played, especially with TJ out, and maybe that kind of sucks for Warren, but he's really proved that two-way value. And not even just like being able to play offense and defense. I think that's even too simple, but even within the system, like we just talked about, being able to do what he's done the past two nights and kind of sliding in. We've seen him nights where he's taking like 10 threes. Tonight it was kind of the opposite, like you're saying. And he called the Bucks were playing really big, which I think posed some challenges. There was lineup where Giannis was like the 2 or the 1.
Yeah, that was a crazy
with
lineup.
It was Giannis, Middleton, Ilyasova, Lopez, and Mirotić all on the court together. But when they play that way, Oubre was smart to be aggressive. He called them elephants, and he's like, you know, he's quicker than those guys. There was a lot of chances where he had an open three in transition or after the defense was scrambled a little bit. And I think there's been nights in the past where we would have just seen him take that contested three. Maybe he makes 4 of 11 and you live with it. But he made an effort to get to the basket. He had a lot of reverse layups, drew contact, and it showed in the box score, 17 free throw attempts.
At least not in the game where he went 7 for 21 and the Suns lost against the Pelicans, but ever since Tyler Johnson pretty much came out and said they need to move the ball more, it seems like Oubre is getting less tunnel vision. Have you noticed that too, especially the past 2 or 3 games, where if he has the ball like 25 feet out, he usually just dribbles and takes a shot, but now it looks like he's like surveying whatever's around him before he goes inside?
Yeah, and I think that goes into what will be my second free throw, so maybe I'll just do that. And I think the rotation is and maybe the credit goes to Kokoschkov, maybe Jones, maybe the, just collectively everybody kind of settling in here. And I think it's been a – we've hit on it almost every game recap episode. Why is the rotation going this way, et cetera? I mean, I think the only nit we would pick at this point is D'Anthony Melton not getting consistent minutes, but he wasn't spectacular on Saturday by any means. So I think it's understandable to go with Crawford after he's been out for a while. So I just think Oubre getting in the starting lineup, being able to build chemistry, kind of understanding what his job is in that unit has helped a lot, and everything's kind of falling into place behind that, where all the guys in the starting unit, especially with Bender's ball movement ability, I think they're just kind of clicking in a good way. And when the bench slides in, I think they don't miss a beat because that precedent's being set kind of right away.
I know it seems like, I mean, Dragan Bender only played 12 and a half minutes tonight, just the first 6 minutes of the first quarter, and pretty much the first 6 minutes of the third quarter, that was it. But he had 0 points, but he also put up 3 rebounds, 2 assists, a couple block shots. What does it say just having Bender out there, at least for the first 6 minutes in each half, just for that spacing and for that extra balming, like you were saying?
Yeah, and I think the, you know, switching and kind of flying around on defense like they've been doing, he's a guy that fits a little better into that, especially to have that size right away. Milwaukee and the Lakers are two different teams, but they also both have length at every position, even though the Lakers were super small with Kuzma at center. So I think Bender being in there, I don't know. Personally, I just feel like having that size, maybe it's just watching this team be so undersized all year, but it just feels like it helps to have that size, because there's been nights where the Suns are just, they're down 10 right away because they just don't have the physical ability to match up with the team. And having Bender in there, even if it's just to start, it helps.
I mean, just think about it from the size and weight perspective, Brett. I mean, 7'1", 240-pound guy between a 6'7", 200-pound guy. I mean, that's Josh Jackson, Dragan Bender head-to-head in that. And that really makes a difference. But for me, my second free throw is going to be our usual guy on here in this list, Devin Booker, who had 22 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists, only 4 turnovers, a plus-minus, plus 14, the plus-minus category. 8 of 18 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, and 39 minutes for Booker. Just, we were talking about off the air before he went on there, but just how nice it must be for a guy like Devin Booker now the past few games to have help alongside him scoring the ball.
Yeah, it's huge. I think he's feeding off of it, and I think you see, like, if this was a night where it's 30 shot attempts and, you know, 9, 10 assists, bunch of turnovers, and he's just every possession dribbling the ball into the ground, pounding it, taking a bad shot or whatever because the offense just isn't working, as we've seen plenty of games this year, I don't think he would have been able to play 39 minutes. So I think it's helping him build that stamina, be able to be effective throughout the game a little bit better, and nailed that pull-up three to really, I think it gave the Suns the lead again or put him up a couple extra points. And so that shot, I think, was kind of proof in the pudding that giving him that help really does help late in games when he's able to come in and close instead of kind of falling out of the picture when he's so tired.
Yeah, absolutely. And just looking more at the positives here, there's another solid game from Josh Jackson. And he had 16 points and 6-11 from the field. Four of his 5 missed from 3-point range, so he was really efficient inside the 3-point line. We also had Tyler Johnson, who had a solid night too, 13 points, 4 assists. He also had 4 steals, team leading a plus-minus, a plus-25. But any other positives? And really, if we think about Brennan, was there really much negatives before we go on our next segment here?
I found one, so I won't show my hand. Okay. But no, altogether, I mean, I think, again, you beat the best team in the league. It's tough to complain, and I think they'll be able to build off of this. This was, I think, a really huge win.
Yeah, that's for sure. Back-to-back wins against the Los Angeles Lakers and the Milwaukee Bucks. Who would have thought about a week ago? But this is the reality now, right now, for the Phoenix Suns. Before we go on here to our next segment, guys, I want to tell you really quickly about our Locked On NBA Twitter account. If you're not already doing so, go ahead and follow at Locked On NBA now on Twitter. I believe it's one of the more valuable resources out there on NBA Twitter. Brent and I not only follow the account, but we also have our account synced on there too. So I know you guys enjoy our Locked On Suns coverage here in Phoenix, but you might be missing out on a lot of great national voice around the Locked On NBA Network. So if you're not already doing so, go and follow at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter.
I want to also remind you guys to check out Homie. Homie is a fantastic real estate service that is trying to just save people in Phoenix a ton of money. We know people move around and there's a bunch of houses always going up around town, and I think that's why they realize how much they can help here. So what Homie does is they're going to sell your house for just $1,500. So that's $199 when you list it and $1,299 at close. They can also help you qualify for a loan to make the process of buying your dream house even easier and smoother. And on the back end, they'll help you qualify for a $5,000 buyer refund. So they have a team of attorneys and lawyers and real estate agents that are there to support you, but they really primarily want to make this process as cheap and smooth as possible as you move into your dream house and start your life in a new direction. To learn more about my friends at HOMIE, text HOMIE, that's H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Again, that's HOMIE, H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Alrighty, I'll start us off with flagrant fouls here, and it's going to be Rashawn Holmes. I think he's somebody who's four offensive rebounds is by far the strong point of his game tonight, but not quite as effective against Giannis. Kind of Suns, I think, got out of rhythm a little bit when he came into the game. They weren't able to execute that scheme defensively quite as well, and not a good night scoring the ball for him at all. 1 of 7 from the field, so not somebody they rely on a ton, only played 14 minutes, but if you have to pick somebody, I think he was kind of the guy that got them out of what was working when he was in there.
Looking at the box score, you're right on the money there. I think I would have picked Holmes as well if it was Jamal Crawford at his own poor night from the field. But Rashawn Holmes, this is, I think, two or three games in a row now where he's kind of a little under the radar as far as underperforming goes. And long-term question for you, Brandon, but maybe this is helping them as far as keeping him long-term. I mean, I don't know if he's lowering his value off just a small sample size, but I mean, it kind of helps when we're talking about in the middle of the season, this could be a guy that's $6, $7 million a year, but now over the past week or so, it could be a guy that's really actually helping the Suns out in the process.
Yeah, that's true. It definitely felt like some team just going to come throw a pile of money his way, and the Suns are going to be forced into a tough decision on a guy that they really groomed into a solid backup. And I think part of it too is just having to adjust. There were nights early in the year where he was getting more minutes than Ayton in closing games. So I think it's just an adjustment too, where we're seeing Ayton get more comfortable, build his stamina up a little bit, be able to play heavier minutes and handle a little more responsibility. And so Holmes is having to adjust. And I think the other thing too is, as Ayton, you mentioned they've been running more offense through him, and that's clearly been true. When Ayton was more of just like a pick and roll kind of defensive guy, using him like a Clint Capella to Booker's Harden, if you want to do that, it's just they were able to play the same way, starters to backups. And with Holmes now, with Ayton playing this way, I think it's a little bit more of an abrupt switch. When Holmes comes into the game, they can't run as much through their center.
For my second freeze, I'm going to move on here off of Rashawn Holmes' point, go to the guy next to him on the bench. I was just alluding to Jamal Crawford, who had 4 points. He also had multiple turnovers. He had 2, and the team worst in the plus minus category, minus 16 in 13.5 minutes, 2 of 7 from the field. Crawford hasn't played the past few games. He wasn't listed on the injury report, but due to a sore shoulder per Igor Kokoshkov. And we were talking about just a few minutes ago on the podcast just about De'Anthony Melton not being in the rotation. Just we were talking about also in the locker room before we even started recording that it seems like the backup point guard spot just seems to be like a whirling dervish. They just have like some nights it's Okobo, some nights it's Crawford, some nights it's De'Anthony Melton.
Evans.
Yeah, even Evans at points. Like it changes almost not every game, but almost every week it seems like now.
Yeah, and I think tonight it makes a little bit of sense, I think, to get Crawford back in there, have him test that shoulder, just have him kind of get back into the flow. I think part of it is nobody is standing out so much that you just need them in the game. So it's kind of like, don't let anyone get out of playing shape or get uncomfortable, but kind of go with it. I would like to see, though, maybe let's see playing 11 or 12 guys. If Crawford doesn't have it, then have it be, he plays 4 or 5 minutes, okay, it's not really going well, then try Melton, try Okobo. The one thing I would say about the rotation, despite having that be one of my positives tonight, is just a little bit too rigid at that spot. It changes every week, but it's also like when it's that guy, he's going to play the full 12 or whatever, and there's kind of no negotiation there. And it's like, well, why don't we just see what Melton has to do in a game like this if Crawford's 2 of 7?
It seems like the big number here, just trying to follow along throughout the whole season with Kokoshkov's rotations, is that it seems like 9 might be the magic number as far as players in a rotation he's most comfortable with, because when you get to like 10 or 11, it seems like those minutes kind of get a little scattered.
Yeah, and it's just a lack of depth. I mean, it's the fact that they had to trade a guy they drafted 3 years ago and all the endless stuff we've gone through, Ryan Anderson not working out. I think if the roster looked like it did on opening night and everyone was contributing, then it wouldn't be so much of an issue, but they just don't have 11 players.
And before we go on to our final segment here, just for our number and our stat to watch, just I wanted to point out really quickly, just Chris Middleton on the Bucks side of things had maybe his worst night of the season so far. 1 of 13 from the field, 1 of 7 from 3, only 6 total points. If Middleton hits maybe 2 or 3 of those shots instead of just one, the Bucks might have won this game.
Yeah, the same thing happened the last time. Just two crazy nights of shooting for key players on this roster. Middleton was 1 of 13. You know, people will remember Lopez was 0 of 12 from 3 and 3 of 17 from the floor the last time these teams met when Phoenix won in Milwaukee. And to get that from Middleton, and Mirotić was 3 of 14, you're not going to win a lot of games when your best players are doing that, and it's just lucky. I mean, the Suns played a good game. They deserve to win this game, but you don't get a lot of games where great players just suck. I mean, that's the reality, and it happened twice against the best team in the league for the Suns.
Yeah, really, really good point you bring up there. And just looking at the numbers again, sub 40%, 36.8% from the field overall for the Bucks, sub 30% from three, 28.6% overall for the Bucks. So those two numbers there really paint a picture of why the Bucks lost tonight's game to the Phoenix Suns. But let's go into our final segment here, Brent, and I'll kick it off here with my stat to watch. And for me, it's just a simple number here. It's free throw attempts, and you look at that, it's pretty equal at 31, but 80.6%, 23, it's 74.2, so 23 of 31, 25, 31. Those two missed free throws, you think about that, you add in the actual three-point attempts too, 7 of 22, 12 of 42. I know I'm kind of adding a multiple categories up at once here, but you just go across the box where just these regular percentages burn, just shooting percentages, and you just see just how vast of a difference it was tonight.
Yeah, the Bucks were, I mean, that's how they play. They're going to jack up threes, and they're going to take contested threes. They're going to take threes early in the shot clock if they're open, and they just added Mirotić, who took the most on the team tonight. So, you know, especially when Giannis isn't having quite the success that he normally does, and I think they did a great job against him tonight, then those free throw attempts aren't going to get quite as high as you might like. Bledsoe wasn't his usual self either, so... just an uncharacteristic night for the Bucks, I think, but credit to the Suns' defense. And I think mine kind of, it's on that end of the ball of the floor as well. It's Giannis's turnovers, so 6 for him. 6 assists, which is fine, but 6 turnovers. I think not only were they able to limit his ability to get to the basket, score, and get to the line, but forcing him into bad decisions and fumbled passes. Oubre was a big part of that, and I'm not tracking Giannis's turnovers by any means, but I can't say that I've watched them or checked in on a box score of the Bucks and seen him be that poor coughing up the ball at all this year.
As far as game plans go, I mean, you got to give Igor credit. I mean, Giannis, even though he almost put up a triple-double tonight, like almost like LeBron on Saturday, as far as just coverages go against the guy, I mean, they did pretty darn good to hold a guy MVP candidate to a 21-point night.
Yeah, they were clogging the paint. I mean, there were 4 or 5 guys at the rim when he got to the basket just about every time. It worked out, as we talked about, with all these guys having cold shooting performances. But the Suns really weren't respecting the Bucks shooters as much as they probably should have. I mean, like, they're great shooters. It's kind of unarguable at this point. But, you know, maybe it was Lopez not doing well. Maybe they feel like Ayton kind of gets Lopez out of his element a little bit. Maybe that's true. That's clearly shown up. I mean, he was 2 of 9 tonight, and he's a big weapon for them a lot of games. So the packing the paint, forcing Giannis into bad decisions and inefficient looks, and letting everyone else shoot really paid off.
One more number I'd be remiss not to hit on before we end today's podcast as far as big numbers go for tonight's Suns win, and that's the block shot discrepancy here, which is 10 for the Suns, 2 for the Bucks. 4 of those guys combined for all the blocks for the Suns tonight, all 4 of them, Josh Jackson, Dragan Bender, DeAndre, and Kelly Oubre, all at least 2. Oubre and Ayton both added 3 of their own. So just activity defensively tonight just seems like that was the main swing as far as tonight's game goes.
Yeah, and I think that's a big reason that somebody like Bledsoe, Middleton weren't able, even Giannis weren't able to be their usual self.
That's for sure. And looking at just final score one more time for you guys tonight, 114-105 was the final score. The Phoenix Suns are 14-51 the season. The Bucks are now 48-16. Shocking, I know, guys, but the Suns are the first team in the NBA this season that beat the Milwaukee Bucks twice this season. So that will do it for today's podcast, guys. Appreciate you guys listening in. As always, we'll be back to you guys tomorrow for our next episode.